Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Before we leave Republican Party presidential politics, by the way, our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, has lots of it. It's a free country. Reporter Anna Sale did a very interesting piece last week, for example, on Paul Lente and the debt that he left the state of Minnesota with. So check it out at itsafreecountry.org. With us now is Angela Davis, whose current work fighting the prison industrial complex is very relevant in New York and nationwide. The University of California professor is coming to New York this week for a related event. To baby boomers of a certain age, the name Angela Davis also conjures memories of both her radicalism and the legal system's injustice against her back in the 1960s and 70s. To make a very long story very short, she was acquitted in connection with the death of a California judge because she wasn't there, and the jury found that the kidnapper used her gun, but that wasn't enough to tie her to the crime. The Free Angela Davis movement of the early 70s inspired songs by John Lennon and the Rolling Stones, among others. She was a college professor both before and after that episode, a two-time vice presidential candidate for the Communist Party USA in the 1980s, an author many times over, and a tireless fighter for prison reform, an issue, as I said, now drawing a new coalition. Maybe you saw the op-ed in yesterday's New York Times about Republican governors like John Kasich in Ohio and Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was in California in the governorship, as well as Republican presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich, getting on the bandwagon of reducing the over-incarceration of urban poor people of color. The U.S. perennially has the world's highest incarceration rate, certainly among what are considered modern industrialized nations. According to a study by the Pew Center for the States, for example, the U.S. hit one in every 100 adults behind bars for the first time in our country's history in 2008. That includes one out of every 36 Latino adults, one out of every 15 African-American adults, one out of 9 adult black men, and even as our crime rate, as we certainly know here in New York, has been going down for 20 years. Angela Davis will be speaking at 7 o'clock Friday night at the Riverside Church in Manhattan in a fundraiser for her group Critical Resistance and for the Brecht Forum. She is now a professor emerita at the University of California, Santa Cruz. Her books include Are Prisons Obsolete? And Abolition Democracy, Beyond Prisons, Torture, and Empire. Professor Davis, thank you for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Certainly. Thank you for inviting me.
Do you think there is a new coalition forming around the issue you've been working on for decades, prison reform?
Well, it's about time that people began to see the extent to which the prison industrial complex devours the resources that we need for other institutions such as schools. Now, I mean, I should say that I think it's very interesting that figures like Newt Gingrich have joined the NAACP, for example, in supporting the call for fewer prisons, more education. However, it seems that someone like Newt Gingrich is more interested in the tax benefits, the fact that there will be, he's opposed to big government, so less government. And I would say that in order to close prisons, in order to abolish prisons, after all, we talk about abolition as opposed to reform, we have to use those resources to build and nourish other institutions. Education, of course, is one of the most important. Just recently, the NAACP released a report called Misplaced Priorities Over Incarceration Under Education, where they revealed the extent to which the emphasis on imprisonment and incarceration, especially in communities of color, especially in black communities and Latino communities, has led to a very dire deterioration of education that is available to young people.
And the numbers are pretty staggering, and this comes from mainstream sources. In 2007, according to the National Association of State Budgeting Officers, as reported by the New York Times, states spent $44 billion in tax dollars on corrections. That's up from just $10 billion in 1987, a 127% increase once adjusted for inflation. And by 2011, the report said states are on track to spend an additional $25 billion. And all of that, as I said before, while violent crime has been plunging in most of the country for the last 20 years, we're down to mid-60s levels here in New York. So, as you probably know, Governor Cuomo has a prison bed reduction program, even at the same time as he's cutting schools.
Well, yeah, and that's the contradiction. I think it really is important that Cuomo is closing prisons or has a project to close down prisons in California, but without shifting those resources to education and other important institutions, healthcare, for example, we won't be able to address the social problems that have resulted in such a soaring prison population. Now, perhaps I should say that it's not so much the issue of crime that has led to such a large prison population. As you pointed out, there's no correlation really between the crime rate and the incarceration rate. Much of the increase, especially over the last 25 years, has had to do with the political economy of imprisonment. It has had to do with the fact that increasing numbers of corporations have discovered a way to make profits from the prison industry, not only private prisons such as Corrections Corporation of America, headquartered in Nashville, Tennessee, the largest private prison corporation in the world. And people may be aware of the role that CCA played in the production of the legislation in Arizona, SB 1070, that is so repressive toward immigrants. So it's not only the private prison corporations, it's also, all kinds of corporations. Well, Wells Fargo, for example, is one of the highest shareholders in CCA. But if you think of all of the communications companies that rely on the long-distance calls that they are contracted to provide for prisons, if you think of all of the producers of the appliances that are used in prisons, if you think about the outsourcing of the meals, the outsourcing of the health care, you begin to see that there are forces in this country that have a stake in the continued expansion of the prison system
and
have nothing to do with crime.
We certainly saw in New York here earlier this year in the budget debate that not so much related to the corporate prison complex, but people in upstate communities where the prisons tend to be located lobbying explicitly on the basis of jobs in the prison industry, versus the people from downstate where the prisoners tend to come from who are lobbying for some of this bed reduction or even prison closings. But it was put in, people had no shame about saying, no, we want our prisons open to keep jobs in our community. But let me push back on one thing about no connection to the crime rate, because most experts do say that one of the reasons the streets have become so much safer is that more street criminals spend more time in jail, more crime-prone individuals off the street. And here in New York, the NYPD stop and frisk policy, controversial for detaining so many young people of color, is about getting guns off the street, mostly where poor people of color live in those neighborhoods, and arresting people for small crimes. The broken windows theory is believed to deter people from going on to bigger crimes. So do you also acknowledge that incarceration at the rates of recent decades serves some purpose in terms of statistical crime reduction?
Well, I think I would have to argue that the disproportionate incarceration of people of color has to do more with surveillance than it does with the actual crimes, whether they be petty crimes or not, that people commit. Now, we know that drugs have provided a motor over the last 30 years or so for this increase in the prison population. And one of the reasons why we see this effort to close prisons has to do with the fact that we've now challenged those draconian laws that have given people such huge sentences for such relatively small offenses. The point that I want to make is that if it is true that drug charges have been responsible for such a vast increase in the number of people in prison, then we can discover that black youth and Latino youth are much more likely to go to prison for drug charges than our white youth, although there is no difference actually in the rate of drug use in those communities. There's no difference in the rate of drug trafficking. So, you know, why is it that black and Latino youth are being used as the scapegoats here?
Angela Davis, my guest on WNYC, talking about her longtime issue, prison reform, which, as we mentioned, is now being embraced by governors, including Republican governors, as an op-ed in the New York Times pointed out from Michelle Alexander from Ohio State University, because of the great expense in these hard times for states. So there's a convergence of interests, which may not have been possible a few years ago. And Angela Davis is coming to New York for an event at Riverside Church, 7 o'clock on Friday night, to benefit her organization, Critical Resistance, as well as the Breck Forum. You want to tell us what's going to happen Friday night here in New York?
Yes. I will be in New York to participate in this really wonderful event sponsored by the Breck Forum at the Riverside Church. I will be in conversation with Ruth Gilmore and Vijay Prashad, who are both leading intellectuals and activists. Ruth Gilmore has written extensively about the geography of the prison industrial complex, and Vijay Prashad has written about a range of issues. So I really look forward to participating in that conversation. By the way, it will be moderated by Laura Flanders, and there will be a performance by the Mahina movement. Publicity points out, and it sort of shocked me, that we are now in an era that is about 40 years after the uprisings at Attica. And I stopped to think, yes, this is 2011. The Attica uprisings took place in 1971. So we'll have a conversation about all of the changes that have occurred over the last four decades. But most importantly, we will talk about what it means to identify with what we call the 21st century abolitionist movement. What would it mean to imagine a world that does not require imprisonment? The theme of the event.
That sounds kind of utopian. You want to take just a minute and explain that? And I noticed that your book title is "Are Prisons Obsolete?" And then you talk about abolition and a world without prisons. Well, that's a lot further than most people go when they call for prison reform or not sentencing nonviolent drug offenders to prison. A world without prison?
Well, exactly. And that is why we want to encourage people to shift the framework of their analysis of prison from reform to abolition. The theme of the conversation is the world we want, is the world we need. We want a world in which there is education available to all. We want a world in which health care is available to all. In order for us to move in the direction of creating a future in which people do not have to fear dying because they cannot afford health care, in which people do not have the opportunity to discover their talents and nourish them. In order for that to happen, we will definitely have to abolish prisons.
We are just about out of time, but before you go, and you mentioned Attica 41 years ago as a hook, it's been about 40 years since your acquittal, acquittal when you were the Angela Davis. But still, after all that time, when I told people you were coming on to talk about this topic, they were like, ooh, Angela Davis, free Angela, the whole thing. Do you wish you could get away from that notoriety, or is it integral to who you are today?
Well, you know, I thought about that for many years, and I've come to see that that movement that was responsible for my acquittal. I've come to see that movement as indicative of something that we need today. I faced the death penalty 3 times, and even though I was not guilty, it was almost impossible to imagine that I could be extricated from the grasp of the state. And this movement, people all over this country, all over the world. I just recently visited India and had the opportunity to meet people who told me how they had organized for my freedom. If we could imagine that kind of community and struggle today in the 21st century, not only around the prison issue, but eradicate war, to eradicate violence against women, homophobia, all of these issues, environmental injustices. If we could build that kind of movement today, I think we would go a long way towards creating the kind of future that we want, the world we need, the world we want.
Angela Davis, thank you very much.
And thank you very much for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and she talked about being in India. Coming up next, Bharati Mukherjee on coming of age in the new India. Stay with us.
Angela, they shot down.